Are you ready, Alabama?
Oh, the band is out on the field!
The band is leaving the field.
And one time, at band camp,
love the drum.
Man, I do love my drum.
You say that's what she said one more time, I'm gonna pop you.
You're welcome to join the doghouse.
Oh God, I'm so sorry I keep doing that.
Call the big dog now at 866-485-9867.
Be a dog.
The clock starts on my whistle.
How you doing?
It's time for the second half of the Tom Abraham Show. Here he is, the head of the household. Here's drum major Big Dog. It's Tom Abraham.
We strong.
You all may be taking the week off, right, this week, but I'm not.
We are efforting Dominic Bramante. We'll see if we get him. I defer to Dominic, who is a full-blooded Native American. You might remember him as the assistant coach back with Coach T back in the day with the Tennessee Valley Vipers or the Alabama Vipers, I think, at that point maybe. But in any event, I've used him in the past to get his reaction and thoughts on the issue of the Redskins name and the ability for the Redskins to trademark that name. If you remember back in 2014, the government canceled six federal trademark registrations for the Redskins, saying that the nickname is disparaging to Native Americans and that it can't be trademarked under federal law that prohibits trademark protection on offending or disparaging language. Well, the Supreme Court now, they upheld an earlier ruling from the Court of Appeals against the United States Trademark and Patent Office, basically saying that we now hold that this provision violates the free speech clause of the First Amendment in an 8-0 decision. Remember, there's just eight right now on the Supreme Court. According to Justice Samuel Alito, that's 8-0 now. That's, no politics involved here. 8-0. He wrote in the opinion, quote, "It offends a bedrock First Amendment principle. Speech may not be banned on the ground that it expresses ideas that offend." So Amanda Blackhorse, who is one of five Native American petitioners who brought the case, the original case. This case, by the way, was concerning an Asian American dance rock band called The Slants. So the band is Asian American. They're called The Slants. They call themselves The Slants. I mean, that's a pretty offensive nickname for Asian Americans, but they call themselves The Slant. That would be like a rap band calling themselves, the N-word. I mean, could they trademark that if they wanted to call themselves the N-word? That would be like an Italian band calling themselves pick one.
I don't care how many Dago, Guinea, Wop, Greaseball, Goombas come out of the woodwork.
Yeah. Could you get a trademark on that? The attorney for the Redskins said the team is thrilled with today's unanimous decision as it resolves the Redskins' longstanding dispute with the government. The Supreme Court vindicated the team's position that the First Amendment blocks the government from denying or canceling a trademark registration based on the government's opinion. Well, vindicated is a strong word there. The government's opinion was that the originally was that the term was offensive. So they went ahead and canceled their trademarks. But what the Supreme Court is saying is they're not ruling on whether or not the name is offensive or not. They're simply ruling on whether or not the First Amendment protects that kind of speech. It may or may not be offensive. It's up to a Native American to tell me if it's offensive. Black Horse said, our case will most likely end now. This is just another day for Native Americans. This is nothing new for us. There's rarely ever justice for Native Americans. Well, they're protected by the same Constitution. The fact that the First Amendment says that you can, that your free speech is, even if it's offensive, that free speech is protected. How is that? I don't know that that's not justice necessarily for Native Americans. Let's go to the lines. Grumpy is up. Grumpy, welcome to the show. How are you?
Hey, man. I'm not a huge NBA guy, you know, but I can understand why people watch it. Hey, what is the shot clock in the NBA?
24 seconds. 30 okay, in college, anyone, 24 in the NBA.
24 in the NBA. And what is it in college?
30.
Okay. Years ago, you know, in NCAA playoffs, there was a couple of teams that slowed everything down in order to bring the talent back to them, you know, because there was such a large – it was a smaller school, and they were playing like Kansas.
Well,
so
it wasn't
a smaller school.
Look, Grumpy, let me just correct you on that. I mean, North Carolina under Dean Smith, one time I'm listening to a game in the 80s before the shot clock.
Yeah.
And North Carolina was leading the game 10-7 with 2 or 3 minutes to go in the game. They were the ones that Dean Smith was the one that invented the four corners, and they would kill the ball for the entire game. And just take, you know, one shot, two shots every 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's why I asked what the shot clocks were, because I remember that. I mean, I've read about that. And has anyone in the NBA put together a team that is going to try to compete with the Warriors and the Cavs by severely limiting the amount of possessions those two teams get? Or would the NBA kind of under the table tell their refs not to call so many charging penalties to hamper that so they could sell more tickets for this run up and down the court crap that we see today?
Well, I mean, look, Showtime basketball goes all the way back, you know, as far as you want to go back. You can go back to the 80s Lakers, you know, when it was Showtime, and people really enjoyed that kind of basketball. Most people did not enjoy the late 80s into the 90s basketball of the bad boys of the Detroit Pistons, when they would just bang on you and there was, you know, foul after foul, and it killed the flow of the game. People liked to seem that they liked the fast break basketball and the flow of the game. But yes, that's a strategy. You know, the strategy is, from a rebounding standpoint, is to not allow the Warriors a second shot. The thing is that they're just such a great shooting group that, you know, how do you defend them? I mean, you can't, unless you can go back to the hand check days where you can put a hand on Steph Curry and push him around a little bit. That's the only way you can slow them guys down.
Isn't great shooting 62% from the field, something like that?
Yeah.
Considered great?
That would be fantastic, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Well, that just seems like if you slow the game down, I don't care how great you are, if you're shooting 62%. But I guess, how about this? What's the best defensive team in the NBA? And maybe I'll try to follow them next year. Who's putting together the best defensive team?
I hate to say it, but T-Mac, you watch it even more than I do. Tell me if I'm lying. The Warriors? I mean, that's the problem here, right?
Really?
I mean, I think the Warriors are, I mean, they're among the best defensive team. The Memphis Grizzlies are always really, really good defensively. The Grindhouse, you know, is a real tough place. The Spurs are very good defensively. That's why the Spurs have a shot. Remember, the Spurs were up on them 3-1. They have a shot. You know, those kind of teams. But the problem is the Warriors are as good as anybody defensively, because they have these fancy guys. They have these Lamborghini guys that can run up and down the court and shoot from anywhere. But then they got guys like Iguodala and some of these other guys, Draymond Green, that are just beasts defensively. They're the perfect blend. Right now, they're the perfect basketball team.
Yeah, I just find myself, whatever sport it is, I appreciate a good defense over a great offense.
Yeah.
That's just the way I am. All right, man, appreciate it.
All right, man. Thank you. You should like Auburn football this year. They're going to be pretty good defensively. I think that's why Grumpy likes, not likes, I think that's his respect for Alabama football. I think his respect for Alabama football, even though he's a huge Auburn fan, I think his respect has to do with the fact that, Alabama just plays such great defense. And if you like good, tough defensive football, it's kind of hard not to kind of enjoy that. Kind of hard not to take that in and to just say, you know what? Hate those guys. Hate the color of that uniform. Hate that, hate that coach. Hate that little coach on the sideline. Hate all of that. Damn, I love watching that kind of football. And I hear that a decent amount. Am I lying, T-Mac? I mean, the Warriors, right? I mean, the best defensive team is the best offensive team.
Yeah, I'm sitting here looking at all the defensive stats, and because I was pretty sure the Warriors were the number one, if not in the top three, which in defensive rating, San Antonio barely edges them out.
Mm-hmm.
But in just about every other category, and Golden State's in the top three, top five, steals, blocks. They're number one in both. They're top three in defensive rebounding, defensive rating. They're number two. It's just, you're exactly right. I mean, they are great in offense, and that does help their defense a little when they make shots. You know, they can, transition down the floor easier. But they are a very good defensive team in the half court as well. So.
I want to make this segment all about controversial offensive things. I thought for sure Grumpy was going to go into that Redskins story. I thought he just left it right there on the table. He just left it there. I want to go down another path just so I can get this out of my folder here.
Hit us with it. Come on.
Mike Schmidt, the famous outstanding Hall of Fame third baseman from the Philadelphia Phillies lore. Mike Schmidt got himself jammed up earlier this week because he made a comment about Odubel Herrera, a Spanish-speaking Venezuelan-born baseball player who he said that the Phillies can't build around because of the language barrier. He said, quote, first of all, it's a language barrier. Because of that, I think he can't be a guy who would sort of sit in a circle with four or five American players and talk about the game or try to learn about the game or discuss the inner workings of the game or come over to a guy and say, man, you got to run that ball out. Just can't be because of the language barrier. He can't be that kind of a player. Now, later that same day, Jerry Remy, who is a broadcaster for the Red Sox, he said that translators for players who don't speak English, like Masahiro Tanaka of the Yankees, should not be allowed on the mound for conferences with coaches and managers. That's what he said. Remy said that, he thinks that, players should have to learn the language. And both these guys got crucified. Remy went on to have to apologize. He said, last night during the course of the Red Sox-Yankee game, I made some comments that offended a number of people in our audience. I'd like to apologize to my colleagues at Nesson, to the Boston Red Sox, but most importantly to the fans who were offended by my comments. The fans who were offended by my comments. I sincerely hope that you accept my apologies. Thank you very much. Now, I'm going to say this about that. Learn a language. If you're going to be paid $20 million a year to come to America and pitch, I say you get a translator for 1 year. How long does it take to learn the language? I mean, really, how long would it take? If you're making $20 million a year and you're a baseball player and you got all this free time, I mean, can't you get like that Hooked on Phonics? No, not Hooked on Phonics. What's that thing called? What's that program that you get that you put in your DVD player or whatever the heck it is, and you learn a language, a foreign language. Learn a foreign language in 30 days. What's that called?
Rosetta Stone?
Rosetta Stone. I mean, look, if you're making $20 million a year, you could buy Rosetta Stone, right? I say you get a translator for 1 year. You've seen this, haven't you? The guys go out and have a meeting at the mound, and the translator comes out. Now, I don't know what happened. Have you ever seen when Gary Sanchez catches Masahiro Tanaka and Joe Girardi goes out to the mound? Joe Girardi will come out of – this is a true story now. Joe Girardi will come out of the dugout with a Spanish-speaking translator and a Japanese-speaking translator. And Joe will ask a question of the pitcher through the translator, who will then answer through the translator back to Joe, who then makes a comment to the Spanish-speaking translator, who says something to the catcher, Gary Sanchez, who can't speak English. And Gary Sanchez wants to say something to the pitcher. And Gary Sanchez says something to his translator, who says something to Joe, who says something to the Japanese translator, who says something to Tanaka. I'll learn a language. If I got transferred to Japan and I was being paid an obscene amount of money to do Japanese sports talk, and I don't know how you say big or dog in Japanese, but if I was the big dog in Tokyo and I was talking about Japanese baseball or whatever, I would have to learn Japanese. They'd say, look, we want you to be a talk show host over here, but you got to learn Japanese. Why is it so offensive for an announcer to say, I think that players, foreign players that come to play in a major league should learn how to speak the language. And why is it so offensive for Mike Schmidt to say that this player, Herrera, really can't be a leadership type guy on the team because he can't talk to anybody on the team? And then you gotta apologize? I don't get it. I don't understand it. And I know you're not, this isn't something you're gonna react to. I know this is something you're not gonna pick up the phone and call. Yeah. Because I'm out there on the limb. It's okay for me. I mean, I can get out there on that limb because I'm me.
I'm telling you, there's an embarrassing press conference in that kid's future.
I know. I get it. But I'm that guy that can be out there and you know. But if you can't speak the language.
Look, I don't speak Spanish.
If I went to Mexico and I was supposed to talk about, and I was supposed to be the, what would it be? Perro Grande? Is that right? Would it be Perro Grande? Is that big dog in Spanish? Am I hitting it? Am I nailing it or what?
I think so. If my 11th grade Spanish education isn't failing me right now, I think that's correct.
And this would be the Perro Casa? Because you say things backwards, right?
Yeah.
So doghouse.
The noun comes first.
No, it would be Casa Perro?
Yeah, the noun comes first in Spanish, I'm pretty sure.
Casa Perro? Would it be the Casa Perro?
Yeah, Casa de Perro, I think.
Casa de Perro? And I would be the Casa Grande. No, that would be Big House. Big House would be the Big House. I would be the Perro Grande.
Now,
right?
Yeah.
I would have to learn the language. You know what I mean? That would be like a prerequisite. Now, I'm not saying that maybe for a year you can't do that. And then these bleeding heart writers, you know, going off and writing about the apologies of both Mike Schmidt and Jerry Remy, and writing that Remy basically said the same thing as Schmidt. Maybe they shopped for apologies at the same place. Insult an entire race of people? Sure, we have something for that right over here. You'll notice there is no mention of Tanaka or foreign-born players in his apology. What's worse, is that both broadcasters are paid to speak on the air, throwing words and opinions around with so little care about how they land is like a cop irresponsibly playing with his gun in public. It's like a construction worker dumping a pile of bricks on someone because they did not care enough to be a little more cautious. Using a player's inability to speak English against them is flat wrong. Not speaking the language fluently should never deter from a player's worth on the field. Does speaking the language help them hit or run or throw? No, it does not. Part of the beauty of sports is that games are supposed to be inclusive. Baseball clubhouses have been melting pots of cultures.
I have more of an issue with that because you're kind of taking what Schmidt said and running with something kind of different. He didn't say that he can't hit or he doesn't have a... His ability's inferior because he speaks another language. No, he's not saying in general that someone who speaks a different language other than, you know, what we speak here in America is inferior. But you're put at kind of a disadvantage when you're in a leadership role trying to lead other players when you come over here and you don't speak the language that the majority of the other people speak. I get what Schmidt's saying. And if what's his face? I'm trying to think of the kid's name he's talking about. The Herrera kid. Yeah. If you're any kind of a leader, you want to be a leader, you'll find a way or learn the language, and try to do that. Now, I'm not saying I'm not just saying that anybody that comes over to America should have to learn the way we speak. What I'm saying is what you were saying. If you had to move somewhere else, if you work somewhere professionally, if you go overseas to work somewhere professionally, whether it's America or, you know, Japan, China, you should learn to speak that language. Regardless, I'm not saying just because they come over here to America, they have to speak it because it's right, and we're superior to everybody.
I'm saying that if they come to America, they need to learn the English. I'll say that. I mean, I got no problem saying it. If you come to this country, all right, and you wanna have the milk and honey that we offer, it is not incumbent upon us to learn to speak your language.
I agree with that.
It is incumbent upon... My grandfather would not allow my family to speak Italian in the house. My grandfather would not allow my family to speak Italian in the house because he said, we're in America now. He didn't say it like that because you couldn't understand him really. He had broken English. But it's in America. It's in the speaking of English,
I absolutely agree with that just because I have the same standard for anything else. If you're going somewhere to live, you need to learn how they talk because you're coming into their house. You know what I mean? This is our house. Learn to speak what we speak. If we're coming to your house, if I'm going to Japan to work or live, whatever, I'm going to have to learn Japan. That's just the way it should be for everybody.
Now, at the end of his life, my grandfather said everything in Italian because, you know, he got old. He was in his 80s. And then, you know, you revert. He forgot all his Italian or his English. Couldn't speak English anymore. But, you know, he just said, look, you can't just come in here. We're not going to speak Italian in the house.
You can't speak Italian just because you have a mustache.
Right. I mean, the point is that for a ball, and especially for a ball player, because you have all the means in the world. You have the time to learn. You know, get your Rosetta Stone going. You got all those trips. You got a lot of dead time when you're a ball player. Look, you got a lot of dead time when you're a ball player. And for these guys to have, and for the writer of this story to finish this story with, so when you insult people who speak a different language, were they being insulted? They weren't being insulted. They were saying that, you know, they should learn the language. When you come over here, he didn't say that they had, you know, bad breath. He didn't say that they had underarm hair that stank. He didn't say that they were bad people or murderers or rapists. He said that you can't be a leader unless you could speak to everybody in a clubhouse. And he said that's what Schmidt said. And the other guy, Remy, said that you shouldn't be able to have you should be able to talk to the catcher and the pitcher should be able to speak to each other baseball talk without having to have translators out there. So this guy says when you insult people who speak a different language, who may need help communicating with others to do their job a bit more effectively, it's low and crass. It's ironic that Schmidt and Remy, both fluent English speakers, understood so little about the toxic words they uttered this week. Toxic? Toxic words. No, those weren't toxic words.
He did a good job. He did a good job stretching what other people said into a story that.
Oh, they both had to apologize. Oh, they both got crushed. They both had to apologize.
For what? I mean, just because that guy took what he said out of context? That guy, the guy that you just read, made it sound like, well, you know, this guy's saying that their skill is absolutely inferior because they can't speak English.
Or
that's
worse,
what Schmidt
believes. They're rapists, and you need to hide your women and children. You know, I mean, that's insulting. Oh, they're just because they're foreigners, you know, they're this or that. He didn't stereotype them.
Right.
He's doing it. El Policio de la Perro. I don't know what I just said. I'm going to cuss. From the text window.
I don't know what you said either, but
El Policio de la Perro. Is that big dog? I think grande. I think it would. De la Perro would be dog. I don't know what El Policio is. All right. That's all I got to say. I'm glad I've been sitting on that for a week. And I'm glad I was able to get that, you know, out of the way. Because I've been sitting there on it, and I needed to say that.
Get off my lawn.
We'll be back. Eitan Shander is next. 97.5, The Fanatic in Philadelphia. Right here on 730-1039 AM.
Read the sign. Beware of dog. Tom Abraham is back.
Radio serendipity. I was just talking about Mike Schmidt. I really wasn't thinking about the fact that we were actually going to go to Philadelphia with Eitan Shander from 97.5 The Fanatic to talk about the NBA draft and the fact that the Sixers once again have the number one draft pick in the deal. But I wonder if my buddy Eitan has a opinion on Mike Schmidt having to apologize for saying that Odubel Herrera, you know, can't really be a leader until he learns the language. And then Jerry Remy's comments about not being able to take translators out to the mound and, you know, whether or not there should be some period of time on that deal. And so I've got to ask, look, I'm never one to be politically correct. I'm just saying, learn the language. You know what I mean? I'm a learn the language kind of guy. But, you know, maybe I'm wrong. Eitan, welcome to the show. How are you, man?
I'm always great, Tom. I'm always great. It's a pleasure to be on. So you're ordering English when it comes to Geno Stakes guy here in Philly.
Yeah. I mean, look, my grandfather wouldn't let us speak Italian, wouldn't let anybody speak Italian in the house. His own kids, when he came over, they said no Italian in the house because we're in America now and you had to learn English and so on. And he reverted to Italian when he was, you know, before he died because, you know, he forgot all the English. But, you know, I'm not saying, is Schmidt insulting Herrera? In his manhood, because he says that, look, I think you need to be able to speak the language to be a leader. I mean, what is wrong with him saying that he has to apologize for saying that, you know, players should learn the language? You know, if you're going to
here's the thing. You know. He's not entirely wrong about Herrera, right? And he's not entirely wrong about the strategy and the team and building around Odubel Herrera, because I wouldn't build around Odubel Herrera with your money. But with that said, it has nothing to do with his language barrier. It has nothing. I mean, the clubhouse is overwhelmingly Spanish-speaking first. So the idea that Herrera – here's the thing. These guys, and rightfully so more than not, don't like the way in which Herrera, Franco, these guys play the game. They don't like the plate approach. They don't like the lack of discipline. They don't like the fact that Odubel Herrera will stare down a sack fly. You know, all this stuff that – these older guys don't like, and it was manifested in a politically semi-incorrect statement. It just had no validity. That's the thing. If he had come out and used baseball first and didn't say anything about the language and the barrier, I think a lot more people would have responded and said, you know what, Schmidt's right. This team sucks. Why would you build around anybody?
Well, what about what Jerry Remy said about, like, when Gary Sanchez goes out to talk to Masahiro Tanaka, they have to have two interpreters and an English-speaking guy to go from Spanish to Japanese to Japanese to English to Spanish to Japanese so that they can have a conversation. Now, I'm okay. I think it should be like a limit. A guy comes over from Japan or comes up, you know, from the Dominican, whatever. 1 year, you get the interpreter. After that, I mean, come on, man. Rosetta Stone, learn the language.
there is technology that exists. I know this, okay? My grandmother has been retired for 15 years at least. She was a translator at the United Nations. So she worked for Israel and had as a translator for the United Nations. I know at the very least 15 to 20 years ago, there's technology where you put in your ear what's being said in another language and it translates into your ear. You're telling me that baseball right now doesn't have the money to have some sort of Bluetooth or some sort of piece that can be put brought out. Doesn't have to be in there the whole time, but can be brought out by the pitching coach, by the manager, whomever it is that goes to the mound, gives it to them, they talk, and then translate. They have this technology to do it. I don't know. Baseball is so ass backwards, man. That's the least of their concerns.
I got another idea. Learn a language! I'm just
it's
saying.
It's hard. Besides Russian and Mandarin Chinese, this is the most difficult language on the planet. We've got rules that don't make sense in this language. We've got words that are sound the same, that are spelled three different ways. We've got people, listen, you're on Twitter. We've got people that are born and raised in this country, and they don't know the difference between there and there, two and two. So you're expecting somebody to come from Japan and all of a sudden learn it?
Yeah, but if you get the job at, you know, WJEW over there in, you know, in Israel, and you're doing All Jew Radio, you're going to have to speak Israeli. You're going to have to learn how to speak the language because you're having a job over there. So I'm just saying, you know, they're not going to let you just speak English.
English is more universal, I think.
There you
go. In that regard, it's the double standard in which we live. Now, maybe if I went to Russia or China, yeah, but I don't know. I feel like I can get away with it a little bit more in Israel.
Did you feel like I offended you when I said WJEW? If I did, I'd just
look. I don't speak Spanish.
Of course,
say
not.
That. I could drop that one.
Of course not. Tom, I know you for decades, or at least over a decade. I don't think I've been offended by anything you've thought, let alone said.
I don't care how many Dago, Guinea, what greaseball goombas come out of the woodwork.
Yeah, but I took care of my people there.
Love it.
I love it. All right, Eitan Shander with us in Philadelphia. All right, let's talk Sixers. Again, they get this pick. People are saying it's got to be Markelle Fultz. First of all, let's say that, right? It is Markelle Fultz, right? That's what they're doing.
Absolutely.
Okay.
No doubt in my mind they're going to take Markelle Fultz. He's the perfect fit. He compliments Ben Simmons at the same time. Ben Simmons compliments him in the backcourt. Simmons is going to run the point. He's going to be the off guard. You saw him play a little out of position at that point in Washington. So he's going to be that natural scorer at the two. And it's going to be a lot of fun to watch these kids grow, man.
And Embiid, I mean, a lot of people thought, I mean, he was the rookie of the year and he was like injured most of the year, but he was that good. People are saying that this triumvirate, these three guys, will be the envy of the entire NBA. Do you agree with that in terms of their youth? And assuming injury-free, which, you know, knock on wood, I'm a Browns fan. I mean, my gosh, I mean, you know, Myles Garrett twisted his ankle getting off the plane and he's in a walking boot. You know, I mean, you can't even get to a press conference in Cleveland without getting hurt. But, you know, this is the NBA equivalent of the Browns. Assuming everybody is healthy, how long does it take? I mean, that's three pretty big parts. How long does it take before this team is a 5-6 seed team playing in the NBA playoffs?
They are an 8 seed next year if Embiid can play over 60 games. Mm-hmm. I've no doubt in my mind that they're an 8 seed. Embiid impacts the game on a defensive level where you're hard-pressed to find it. It's not even on like an Anthony Davis, Rudy Gobert level. It's something that I just haven't seen before. And I'm only 38, and, you know, you and others go back before me, and you see these advanced metrics that are comparing him to Wilt for a reason. Now, again, it's only 31 games, and I know pump the brakes, slow down, but the hypothetical has to start with a healthy Embiid. If that kid can play over 60 games, you get 66 games this year from Joel Embiid, that's an 8 seed, maybe fighting for a 7 seed. Markelle Fultz will be able to come in and score, get his shot off, be able to get to the basket. The biggest problem that this team's going to have, and this is going to take a year, it's going to take a full year for them to be next year competing for like a 5, maybe, depending if they can add a free agent of note, a 4 seed in the East, because we know it's kind of volatile. But the big problem that they're going to have right away is young point guards in the NBA struggle. First-year point guards, when they come into situations, it doesn't matter how good or bad their team is, they struggle. It's one of the most difficult things to do right now in professional sports, play that position. Ben Simmons is big. It's different for him on the NBA level. Fultz is going to be asked to be a facilitator like a point guard at times. So that's going to take some ups and downs. They're going to turn the ball over a lot. You'll see Ben Simmons with 7 or 8 turnovers at times, and it's because he has the ball in his hand so much. So my 2-year plan is you make a 7-8 seed run this year, and you put the NBA on notice that the three of them combined with Dario Saric as a fourth role player, Brett Brown, who's becoming a good coach. Now year 2 of this, the idea is to shoot for a 5 seed, and then you make a run at Klay Thompson.
And yeah, well, there you go. I mean, now you're making a move. And I'm, you know me, I've been a big believer that that corridor, the NBA is a better place when Philadelphia, New York, and Boston are all good. I mean, it would be, and Boston bounced back so fast, you know, to the point where they were the number one seed in the East. Even if they weren't the best team in the East, they were the number one seed in the East this year. And the Knicks are such a grease fire. I mean, it's just ridiculous, you know, the shape of the Knicks. But I think it would be better. Is that love and feeling still there? I mean, would, in terms of how Philadelphia 76er fan is and Philadelphia basketball fan is, are they ready right now to embrace this thing, or do they got a lot of work to do to kind of rebuild the fan base?
No, the fan base, that's a misnomer I think you get from like the Seth Greenbergs and the Stephen A. Smiths of the world that like to throw wet blankets on any little spark of fire that they can find. The reality is that, look at the logic, okay? Fans have been ripped recently for celebrating the arrival of Markelle Fultz and the year before the celebration of the arrival of Ben Simmons. I was at an NBA draft lottery party at Xfinity Live, which is our huge venue that holds about 6,000 people in South Philadelphia, right by the stadiums. The thing was jam-packed. That sucker was at max capacity. People were there just celebrating the lottery. These are the people that are getting ripped nationally by folks who aren't here. Yet the irony is those people never left. They were watching the bad basketball. They were watching right. The tank years. They were waiting for the arrival of Nerlens Noel and Joel Embiid and Jahlil Okafor and Ben Simmons, some who have hit, some who have missed. So these guys, young fans and some even my age, they haven't left, man. They haven't gone anywhere. They may not have shown up in droves to the stadium, but they're paying attention. They're watching. They're listening. So it's almost like they were just dormant. And somebody just woke them up the last year or two with a big stick and said, hey, it's time to wake up. But they've been there. They've been paying attention, and the fan base is here. And to your point about the Northeast real quick, remember in the 80s, and I'll appeal to you, man. You know, you're an old school hoops guy. That 30 for 30 comes out, and there's a small little blip about the Sixers going on and winning the championship. But you know, man, the Sixers and the Celtics, that was a huge rivalry in the 80s.
Oh, yeah.
Dr. J and Larry Bird and this, the hatred that you had. We had a guy nicknamed the Boston Strangler, D'Angelo, right? I mean, that's right. How crazy it was with the rivalry here. And that's back because Boston might be a couple of years ahead as far as veteran talent, but that rivalry is back. Philly versus Boston, that hatred is back, and I love it.
Yeah, I almost cried when they asked Paul Pierce about the rivalry with the Knicks a few years ago, and he said, what, that's a rivalry? I remember the rivalry with the Knicks. I mean, it was the Knicks.
That's
you know?
Right.
And
then right.
He was like, well, when, did that, yeah, when did that become
you
know, a rivalry,
you're
right?
You're going to see Porzingis versus Embiid. We hope for the next decade you're going to see the Boston Celtics field the team and be competitive with the Knicks and the Sixers. You're right, man. All that is coming back, and it's great because young fans get to experience it again.
Now, we saw that the Celtics fleeced the Brooklyn Nets. Are you good with this trade? Was it a fair trade, or does it feel like the Sixers might have given up a little too much?
No, I'm shocked they didn't give up more.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. When you tell me at the end of the day that I give up this year, I swap this year's pick, and I give up either the 18 Lakers or 19 Kings pick and still keep one of them, which is going to be a value, I'm shocked that I don't have to give up a future Sixers first-round pick. That can be used in a trade for Klay Thompson or somebody else. So I think Brian Colangelo deserves a lot of credit here. He read the market. Danny Ainge tried to dangle that pick the night of the lottery when he found out he was going to draft number one and didn't get nearly what he thought in return. Brian Colangelo waited, jumped in, and was able to take advantage of Danny Ainge wanting to make a trade so he can use this currency to maybe land Jimmy Butler at this point.
And what would you say about this comment that was posted at ESPN? Markelle Fultz will have the worst college record of any top pick in the common draft era, and Ben Simmons missed the NCAA tournament in his 1 year in college basketball. Can the Sixers establish a winning culture without a winning pedigree? Can you win with guys like that that haven't learned to win yet in this day and age where we take them, you know, after they don't even know their way across campus and they're, you know, and they're off to the NBA?
Joel Embiid sat here for 2 years and watched this team stink on purpose. Saw and listened, because he's active in the city and he's on social media and he listens to the radio and watches TV, and saw and was inundated with the losing and the losing culture that people ripped and said, this is going to have a terrible impact on the city and on the fan base. Let me tell you something. That building shook like I haven't seen it since Allen Iverson was there when Joel Embiid came out. I was there opening night when they took on the Oklahoma City Thunder. Tom, I kid you not, this is not hyperbole. That place was as loud as I've seen it since Allen Iverson was there. And I'm talking like good Allen, 0-1 Allen. I'm not talking, you know, Allen on his way out to Denver. There's something I've never seen before, the electricity. So these kids are walking in to the opportunity to play in front of fans who have been so hungry for them to just come and play, that it's going to be electric. And on top of that, let's look at where the NBA is real quick. You've got 19 and 20-year-old kids who are one and done coming into the league. They're still growing physically. They're still maturing as individuals. This is college for them. This is Kentucky for them. Throw four guys who you know are going to be good in the NBA. Dario is the fourth one. And this is a chance for them to grow. And just to address the college stuff, because I think it's widely overblown. So Ben Simmons loses his top two scorers on that team in LSU. And I think the third scorer missed some significant time as well. He had nobody that can score the basket consistently. He struggles at times to shoot from the outside as well. They had no offense. They had nobody that could put the ball in the basket. Magic Johnson, Jason Kidd, they're not bringing that team to the tournament. Markelle Fultz committed to Washington and stayed with Washington because they came at him early, and he showed loyalty to Washington. When the two guys who went on to the NBA said, hey, you know, come here and recruited him and then bounced, he didn't leave. He didn't switch schools. He didn't go to Kentucky and take a year off. He didn't do any of that. He stayed in Washington and stayed committed and stayed loyal to the team and the program that reached out to him. That, to me, holds more weight than his record on the floor.
All right, Grasshopper, I'm proud of you, man. Keep up the great work.
And, I thank you for so much, man. I learned everything from you, brother.
Yeah, I hear you. All these young guys that I work with are all better than me, and you're doing a tremendous job. I appreciate you. Good luck, man, and we'll talk again.
You're the one that's working consistently, brother, all right?
That's
hire
a whole other
me,
thing.
Will you?
All right, brother, appreciate you.
I'll talk to you, man.
Thanks. He's good. He's good, T-Mac, right? He's good. Says he learned everything from me. He's good. They all say that, right? And I'm here, and they're all over the country.
Oh, and yesterday I sucked up to Cole, huh? No, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I didn't tell him. I just said, I said Grasshopper. I called him Grasshopper. I said,
I make a sarcastic remark to Cole Kubelik, and I get called a suck-up. This guy over here, sucks up to you the entire interview. And, he's great. He's better than me. He's good. He's great, man.
He really was good. Godfather to these guys. You know what I mean? I'm their radio godfather. You know what I mean? I birthed them, and I set them free, and they go off and do wonderful things, and they're all doing good.
You know, one of the things that's really cool about all the old producers you've had that have gone on to other things, every time we get them on the show,
yeah,
there are different kinds of guests that we have, but every time we get one of those guys, no matter who it is, they're all really just really cool, friendly guys.
Yeah.
And that's,
respectful too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They're very, very respectful.
And I can tell you.
Which I appreciate. I can call any of my guys anywhere in the country, and they jump. I mean, boom, that's it. They don't care if they're network guys, big city guy, doesn't matter. They jump on with me. You know, I appreciate that. Well, that's respect.
Well, I'll tell you this. The reason why it's like that is because you kind of preach that environment around here. Working for you, it's in that kind of friendly, respectful environment. So they absolutely do learn that from you. So.
Yeah, but yet, you know, everybody says other stuff about that. But, I mean, that's a good comment by you. Studio audience seems very happy with you for saying that. But, no, I have this reputation. I am very hard, and I am hard. I'm hard on guys. There's no question about it, but that's good. All right, let's get a break. We'll come back, wrap this hour up, set you up for the Fab Five next. It's the Tom Abraham Show, 730, 1039. Yeah.
Now back to the big dog. This show is rough.
the way, final hoop thought. You know, with all this talk about the Warriors being invited to Congress by the Democrats. Oh, come and see us instead of going to the, you know, the president or the White House hasn't even extended an invitation yet to the Warriors. But, you know, Steve Kerr doesn't like Trump and players and blah, 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 blah. You know what? It's time. It's time for Donald Trump to step up and make another necessary and probably wildly unpopular move. It's time for him to end the practice of sports teams visiting the White House. It's stupid. It's irrelevant. It's irreverent. No, irrelevant. It's a waste of public time and money. And now it's more political than ever. More press goes to the dissenters than it does the supporters. Just stop it, okay? To paraphrase Nike, just stop it. All right, coming up, Fab Five, open lines at the top of the hour. I invite you to use them at 866-485-9867. Go ahead and jump on board with me. College Football News has made their bold predictions. Some pretty strong stuff I'll share next on 730-1039 AM.